So we are about to start Parag Deis, Hilchos Gimel, Parag Gimel, okay, Hilchos Deis. This is such an important halacha, okay, and it takes you on a detour from where we were. And the underlying question to this is going to be, why is the Rambam doing this here? Okay, till now we've been talking about how I develop myself in terms of character traits, okay. You know, if I'm an angry person, if I'm a negative person, how do I work on that? How do I find that middle ground the Rambam has been talking about, okay? Now, the Rambam is going in a completely... Benny, unfortunately the echo here travels like right down here. I'm sorry, right? The Rambam is going to pick on a very particular issue. And the question is going to become why? I don't think it's that difficult a question, but I think you have to be aware of the question because it leads you in a direction. Right? So we'll see what we mean. So let's say that we agree that the goal is the middle ground. And let's say that if you're not in the middle, and it's very rare that a person is exactly in the middle, that there's an obvious solution to this with the exception of anger and arrogance, and that is... Go to the other extreme. Go to the other extreme to get back to the middle. Okay. There's a danger with that. Okay? There's a danger with that. Let's say, for example, you realize that you eat too much. Okay? Most of us at one point or another have that issue. You haven't had it yet. You will. Trust me, right? You realize you eat too much. So what's the obvious answer? Right? You gotta go to the extreme. Starve yourself. Just eat bread and water. Okay, let's say that a person is just realizes he's getting into shtuyot. He's just I don't know. He's getting into nonsense. He's there's a pinball arcade and he's addicted to pinball arcades and he just goes to town and once he's in town and does all sorts of other things. He realizes, gotta, so what does he do? He decides I'm not going to town for a month. Okay. Let's say a person has issues with lust. Sexuality, those types of things. So such a person says, you know what? I'm going to become an ascetic. I'm going to stay away from women. If you stay away from women, you won't have those issues. So you'll say to me, the Catholic Church has people that stay away from women. They have other issues. You know, stay away from people. And it's not a bad idea. Live in a cave. Learn Torah all day. Not a bad idea. Think about how many avirot you just will not be able to do. So the Rambam says... Wait, 1 second. The Rambam says, Shema yomar adam, lest a person say, Ho'il v'akina v'atava v'akavod v'chayotze b'hem. Okay, regarding kina, which is jealousy. Okay. Tava, appetites. Kavod, honor. And all these types of things. Derech ra'ahin. U'motzin et ha'adam min ha'olam. This is pretty clearly bad. It's a bad way to go. And it takes you out of the world. Now, the Rambam is quoting a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that he mentioned at the end of Perek Bet. Okay, if you remember, at the end of Perek Bet, in Halacha Zion, I think. 1 second. Right. If you look at Halacha Zion at the end of Perek Bet, so we said, Lo yehe adam bal schoku mitalot v'lo atzeva. A person shouldn't be too jolly, fooling around. He shouldn't be, lightheaded and just full of nonsense, nor too serious and sad. And kach amru chachamim, and chachamim said, tzchok v'kalut rosh magilin t'adam l'erva. A person who gets into tzchok, hololut, fooling around, lightheadedness, pranks, all sort of thing, too much, you get into trouble, right? V'tzivu shelo yehe adam parutz v'tzchok v'lo atzevu mitabel. Elam kabelt kol adam b'sev p'nim yafot. You remember we talked about this, that a person shouldn't be at either extreme, right? Shouldn't be too serious and too sad. Don't make yourself to be a tragic figure just to avoid, sort of the obstacles of fooling around too much. Nor should you be too lightheaded and fooling around all the time, right? Etc. You shouldn't be someone who has lust for things and is constantly running after stuff. Nor should you be a person who doesn't work at all. Ela ba'alayin tova. Do less business and immerse yourself in Torah. Whatever little you have, Like, you don't need to be a multi-billionaire. Earn a living and learn Torah. V'lo bal k'tata, v'lo bal kina, v'lo bal tava, v'lo radev achar kavod. And here the Rambam says, you shouldn't be a person who gets into fights, arguments, argumentative. You shouldn't be a person who's jealous. You shouldn't have extreme appetites, bal tava. V'lo radev achar kavod. You shouldn't run after honor. Right? Pirkei Avos says, if you run after honor, you will never find it. And if you run away from it, it will always find you.
What does he mean by honor? What does he mean by honor?
What does he mean by honor? Where people respect the external trappings of respect. In other words, that we should respect a certain type of person is one thing, but that he should want that respect for himself is another. In other words, if you want respect for yourself and it has nothing to do with yourself, like if a Rebbe wants, you know, is finding an educationally viable way for his Talmidim to have a little Kavod Torah to respect him because he represents Torah, that's a healthy thing because it's not about him. It's about the Torah he represents. But if he wants the honor because, you know, it's important for his ego, something's off with that, right? And you can smell, you can sense when a person's about themselves and when they're not, usually, if it's an extreme, right? And then the Rambam quotes the Mishnah, Kach amru chachamim, akina v'atava v'akavod motzin t'adam min ha'olam. These three things take you out of the world. Now, what does it mean, take you out of the world? This is a direct quote from Pirkei Avos. What does it mean that these three things take you out of the world? What do you think it means that you're taken out of the world? I mean, I would think if you run after honor, you're very much in the world. Because you want all that stuff. I would have thought, make a case for the fact that you shouldn't be in the world. You meet people who are so in the world, and they think that you're in the greenhouse. Because you live in a world of Torah and Mitzvot, and you're in Yeshiva, and they're in the real world. You ever hear that phrase, right? When you get back to the real world, what's the real world? Well, the real world is where you earn a living, and you make money, and you can buy a nice car, and you can have respect, right? I don't know, is that the real world? Or is this the real world? Maybe you're leaving the real world, and you're getting back to the world of illusion. Pardon? Well, if God doesn't exist, you're right. Then you can make a case for saying there's no real world. But as soon as we believe that Hashem exists and created everything, then there is a reality. The question is, pardon? No, we can debate whether God exists. You can't debate whether, if God exists, there is a real world, right? So if Hashem exists, you can imagine my opinion on the matter. So then reality is sourced by Hashem. So we're not going to go there right now, because although I love going there, but whatever. But what is that reality? Like, by the way, my issue is not with someone who says, I don't think God exists. Like, that's a separate issue. But you meet lots of people who very deeply believe that Hashem exists. They believe that Hashem exists. They know Hashem exists. They'll tell you they know Hashem exists. And yet you see that they're still running after this stuff. It's still important, you know? You meet a guy who, I don't know, does Daf Yomi in the morning and he's driving a Ferrari. Now, I don't know what these things cost, but it's not a $20,000 car. So a guy is spending $150,000 on a car. There must be a car you can buy for $150,000, right? Let's say. Whatever, that Rolls Royce. I don't know. If I drove in here with a Rolls Royce, and I drove around in a Rolls Royce, if I had an Armani suit, okay? I was once curious. I went to get a suit, and there's a place, it's not far from, what's it called? Barney Brothers? I forget what it's called. But basically, they do free shotness testing. And they have like a sale once a year. So you get like a suit for like $199, including the shotness test. That's my kind of suit. I live in Israel. I don't need a fancy suit. But you go in there and you say, like, what style are you looking for? And I always say, I'm looking for the $199 style. All right? Okay. Then I get the look like, okay, someone will help you, right? So I asked once out of curiosity, what's your most expensive suit in the store? I said, I'm not buying it. I'm just curious. I don't want you to think I'm right, because that's Kanevas Das. He said, well, you can get nice suits for $4,000. Okay? People do this. People buy a suit for $4,000. Okay? So now a guy is spending $4,000 on a suit. He's spending $200,000 on a car. And he thinks that's the real world. And maybe for many people, that is the real world. And yet, he has an obvious tava for stuff that's a little to the extreme. I mean, we could debate this, but I don't think you need to drive a $200,000 car. There are orphans in the world. You could drive a $50,000 car and give $150,000 to an orphanage. That's just my opinion, but whatever, right? So why does that take you out of the world? Give me an obvious answer. And then we have to see what this has to do with Hilchos Deos. Why does it take care of the world? Yeah. Okay, but why? How does that work? Like, think about it. Could you think of a reason that it would be worthwhile and actually proper to buy yourself a $200,000 car? Could you think of a reason that it would actually be proper to buy yourself a $200,000 car? It'd be okay.
If you just wrote like a $50 million check to charity.
No, it's still a $200,000 car. You could have written a $50 million. Hashem is not going to give you a tough time over the $50 million that you gave. He's going to give you a tough time over the $150,000 you didn't give, right? I mean, that's just because God's Jewish, right? So, right? What's the, yeah?
So you're like a missionary.
What do you mean?
Trying to convert people for whom that's important. That's something that they respect. So then you're going to, in order to bring God into their life, you're going to buy a 200,000 car, and you can justify that for yourself.
Okay. You don't even have to go that far. Let's say you're a real estate agent, and you work in Beverly Hills, and you sell, you know, and you deal in million or multi-million dollar homes, and you give an enormous amount of tzedakah, and you learn Torah, and you do all that stuff, and you know that when you pick up a client and he sees you driving a $200,000 car, he says, this guy must know what he's doing because he's successful. People do this. People lease ridiculously expensive cars because they have to promote that image of success. The fact that I'm buying into a world that equates success with a $200,000 car is a problem, but at least I would think that that'd be like, that's parnasa, that makes sense to me. I'm not saying that objectively a $200,000 car is wrong. So what makes something wrong, right? The theme here is, why am I doing it? Like, what is reality? What is olam? What does it mean, motzi adam min olam, take you out of the world? You have to know what the world is in order to know what it means to be out of it. If reality, yeah?
Something, if you use something as which is supposed to be a means and becoming an end, like we were talking about on Shabbos, and
right,
it becomes a Avodah Zarah for you,
right?
And if you do something as a Avodah Zarah, it's going to take you out of the world, which is supposed to be Torah, and it's supposed to be.
In other words, if reality begins with my relationship with Hashem, right? If we talk about the idea that Kedusha, that the role of the Jewish people is Kedoshim to you to be Kadosh, and that means to be a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world. How do I bring Hashem into the world? If you remember when we studied Tefillin, we said that the Marsha says that when I bind Tefillin to my arm, what I'm basically doing is I'm experiencing Dveikut. I'm attempting to give meaning and action to the idea of clinging to Hashem. I want to cling to Hashem. I want to be connected to Hashem. How do I connect to Hashem in the deepest way when I feel that I'm fulfilling my purpose? If I can do something that allows me to access my purpose in this world, if I can be doing something, and whatever it is that I'm doing is an expression of the fact that I have meaning in this world, that I have purpose in this world, that means I'm created. And that connects me to Hashem. That makes a lot of sense. If I want to understand how to bring Hashem into this world, it's when I feel that I'm doing something that has meaning and has purpose, that's connecting me to my purpose, right? On any level, it could be the most mundane thing. Right? We're about to give Hilchos Deos here. I'm rushing because I try to be on time. But I know that I'm going to give a better shiur if I have a cup of coffee. It sounds like a silly thing. I just know. You know, I happen to think that if the goal, for example, of a raita, right? You could pick one of the goals that we have here. I want you to fall in love with learning Torah. Not because I have some agenda, not because I can check it off, not because I can call up Business Week and say, we have 10 guys who love Torah, because I think it'll fulfill your life. That's all. Because I'm fulfilled by my relationship with Torah, and I would love for you to be able to walk away and love Torah like I love Torah, because if you do, it gives you an anchor in your life. And you can tell me if that's true. Whether this year, being in a Jewish desert to some degree, the fact that you have this love for Torah, it gives you something in your life that you're glad you have. Let's say that's true. So how do you do that? How do you do that? When I think, right? When you learn with someone who loves Torah. If you learn with someone who's teaching Torah because it's a job, which I think unfortunately often happens, you know, when I was teaching high school, so I had a difficult experience at a particular class. I'll spare you all the details, but by the middle of the year, I wasn't enjoying it. I had six different classes in one room of six boys. I had a boy who used to walk in without a kippah, you know, just to see what I would say about it. And I had a boy with payas who wanted to study like the Meiri, right? I had every kind of gamut in six boys, and two of them really wanted to learn Gemara. Two of them didn't believe in God and hated God, and I was trying to give a Gemara shiur. It was very difficult, and that the school didn't get it. I wanted to do two tracks, a Gemara track and another track. This is long before Raita existed. It's like 15, 20 years ago. And I went to the principal, and I said, I don't think these boys should be in this school. We learn Gemara. So I got to the point, in the middle of the year, I just wasn't enjoying it. I suddenly realized, I'm going to work. I'm not going to learn Torah. I'm not looking forward to this. It turned me off to teaching high school kids. I have infinite respect for high school Rebbeim, because I got a little taste of how difficult it is. I would do it differently today, but whatever. I want to enjoy. I don't just want to do it out of a principle, right? So in order for you to love Torah, you have to at least be learning with someone who loves Torah. I love this. I love this. I hope you'll love it, but I love it. Part of why I love it is because I'm sipping my cup of coffee. So this cup of coffee is not just a cup of coffee. This cup of coffee is a small little piece that allows me to fulfill my purpose. So it actually connects me to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If it was Taste of Choice vanilla coffee, then bechlal, it would check me to, that's a whole different level, right? So that's my reality. That's what I think reality is. Reality is, what are we really here for? What's the purpose of all this? So if I'm driving a $200,000 Rolls Royce, because that allows me to bag that client, because that allows me to make enough money so that I can build a hospital for orphans, right? Then that's not distancing me from reality, because that's not tava. That's not lust for things. That's actually utilizing things as a vehicle for reality. But if I lust the stuff, if I think the stuff is the point, it takes me out of the world. And those three things are the recipe for removing you from the world. Now, what is that doing in Hilchot Deot? Why is that here? So think about it. Honor is a tool like everything else, right? Honor is a tool. You know, I remember many years ago, we were asked by this organization called the Coalition of Missing in Action. They wanted to, we were in Boca, and they were doing a dinner, and they asked if we would, you know, they wanted to honor us because we were doing a lot of work with the MIAs, whatever. So my instant reaction was, you know, no, but I'm happy to help you in any way I can. And they wouldn't let up. They called and they emailed or whatever. And finally, someone who I really trust, whatever, called me up and asked me, would I be willing to do it if Yonah Baum will ask me to do it? So I said, listen, if Yonah Baum thinks it's important, then I'll do it. So Yonah Baum called me up, Zach Baum's father. I actually felt bad at this point that I had said no three times because now I was making Yonah Baum getting, like, it was a chore for him. I really felt bad about it. It was a Musar Haskell. He said, listen, we're not honoring you because we want to honor you. You don't need to be honored. They need you to be honored. They need to have an honoree so that your friends will come to honor you and they'll be able to support you. I said, okay, I get that. Like, even honor has a goal. It's a very uncomfortable feeling to be at a dinner where they honor you. You don't really want to be honored. You don't want to use up that stuff in this world, right? It's not healthy, right? But if you're doing it because it helps serve as a higher purpose, you know, you go to these dinners and you get these wealthy people and they're being honored, they're not being honored because they need the honor. They don't need you to honor them. You know, we have like, you see here, like there are plaques, you know. Those plaques are not because those people need to be honored. Those plaques are because those people were willing to do something to be a vehicle to create goodness in the world, right?
Why do you put your name on a plaque?
It's a very good question because you don't have to. Different people do it in different ways. But it actually helps the organization. Like the fellow who donated the Aron, he's very uncomfortable with being on a plaque. But he knows that when people walk in here and see his name and see him on a plaque, then it inspires them to give. And this is actually true. Look at this. You see why this is empty? Mm-hmm. Why is that empty? Because someone walks over and sees that one, and then they see this one, and they realize they could do a mitzvah. Nobody really thinks that the amount of money that we hope that they'll help us support. You know, we'll have a scholarship fund next year. Right? Next year. One thing I can say, and I don't know if we'll be able to continue this, never had a student, Baruch Hashem, that got turned down because of money. Never. I hope we never do. Right? So that, you know, obviously, that's... So imagine if somebody's having an incredible year and they got this incredible year because someone else was willing to help them even though they don't know them and they probably never will know them. That's unbelievable. So people get inspired by those things. So that's an example of honor. It's very dangerous because it can go to your head. You know, you go up to a chuppah, okay, and they call you up by name. I was once at a wedding and I was in the back. It's a longer story, but this girl was a student and they were calling up. There were all these gaonim. You know, Hagon, this and Hagon. Then I'm saying back. Then they call up Hagon, Harav, Binyamin, whatever. Fine. I didn't realize it was me. So somebody goes like this, because I think they just called you up. I said, huh? And they're like looking for, you know, a gaon or a food. I got elevated. I got promoted to a gaon. So that's, I guess, in that neighborhood, that's what they call you, a gaon, whatever, right? So it's very embarrassing, like, to walk up there. It just is. Like, you watch Talmid Chacham, they walk up to the chuppah, they walk up quickly, they don't want to really be whatever, right? So why do you let them call you up by your name? Because if the chatan and kala feels that at my chuppah, Rav Shlomo Levi came, and Rav Medan came, and Rav Bik came, and we called them, Rav Drukman came, and we called them up to the chuppah, it was such a nachas for my parents that these rabbanim came and were willing to come and stand under the chuppah and give a bracha. You think they needed to be called up, harav, haga, whatever it is? Of course not. But it was a bracha. It was a gift that they gave to the parents, the parents of the lineage. So honor has its vehicle. But if you pursue honor for honor's sake, if you think it's about you, it takes you out of the world. That's not reality. So now what does that have to do with Hilchot Deot? Right? Why is that here? Okay? Why do you think that has anything to do with how you develop in your character? Because what's the... Well, you tell me. Why is it important... What the Rambam is saying here, or is about to say about asceticism, as relates to Hilchot Deot. So first, hear the halacha, right? Shashema yomar adam huil vakina ve'atava v'kavod v'chartzei b'em derech ra'ah hin motzim ta'adam min ha'olam. Lest the person say that since these things are just evil, and they take you out of the world, they put you into a world that's not reality, right? You ever meet a person who really pursues honor? You can't, shalom aleichem, you can't talk to them. You don't want to be around them. There's unhealthy energy. People who lust stuff to such a degree, you'll see this. We've basically messed you up. You just don't realize it yet. You'll get back to university, and you'll meet, you know, other students who are a year younger than you, and they'll still be into this stuff. And you'll be into it to some degree, but you won't be into it to the degree that they're in. You can't be, because you were here for a year. And the more they're into it, the less able you are to have a healthy relationship with them. It takes you out of that, right, of that world. Right? So a guy says, Efrosh mehen, bioter. Ve'etrachek letzad achron. So you know what I'll do? I don't want this stuff in my life. I don't want to worry about being arrogant. I don't want to worry about being honored. I don't want to worry about having too much stuff in my life because it's unhealthy. Right? I've been to people's houses that have 5 rooms and 15 television sets. You know, I once went to interview a student, and I saw this, and I just it gave me a lot of pause for thought. I know people who have. I was in a kitchen once, and they had a TV over here, like they had a big island in the middle of the kitchen, and like a big antenna. They had a TV over here and a TV over here. So I asked the lady, I said, "How come you have 2 televisions?" So she said, "Well, I'm doing stuff on this side, I can watch the TV over here. When I'm doing stuff on this, I watch the TV over there." So I didn't say anything. I thought, "Wow, you know, like that's." I don't know. It's very dangerous what I'm saying because it sounds very judgmental. So what do I know? But sometimes you just get too much stuff. So what's the?
You want to watch TV no matter what you're doing. It's good.
I guess if that's the goal. I guess it depends what you're watching on TV, right? But okay, right? There you go. It could be. Ad shaloyo. So a person says, "I'm going to be a fresh man biyoter. I'm going to remove myself from them." I'll distance myself as far as I can. What's the best way to make sure that you never have to worry about getting drunk? Just don't drink wine, ever. Don't drink wine. I don't want to be too lustful. I won't eat meat. Right? Now you know what I think about that. I won't get married. I don't want to live in a nice place. I don't want to be I don't want to be dealing with stuff. I don't even want to dress nicely. I want to show the world that this stuff isn't important. You meet people like this sometimes, unfortunately, in the yeshiva world. I don't need to fix my pants, and I don't need to shine my shoes, and I don't need to wear this. And I've got my plaid jacket and my polka dot pants. And, you know, I know a fellow once, I had a discussion, who's very marked to wear a jacket for davening. Okay, that's a very strong minhag. So, you know, and when I remember, I put a jacket on for davening, because it's also sometimes makes you feel a little more bechavad, you're bechazor before Hashem. So, but his jacket is so disgusting. It's like the sits in yeshiva jacket. He probably hasn't taken it to a cleaner's in like 10 years. It's got stains, and it's got a rip in the corner, or whatever. So I asked him once, I said, "Why do you wear a jacket for davening?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Just what I said." He said, "Because, you know, you're supposed to be respectful." I said, "Well, you know what, that jacket's not doing that mitzvah. You really need to work on that, right?" So I said, "It's true." Ella hasak ve'atzemer hakasheh. He's going to wear sackcloth and hard wool that grates your skin. Kigok v'chayotzeben. Kigon kohane avdei kochavim. By the way, it's interesting that in Shmona Prakim, the Rambam has a similar discussion, and there he says, what is it? Kemumarei haromayim. He talks about the Roman priests. I think he was thinking about Roman Catholic monastic orders. They do this. They distance themselves. They don't talk. They don't eat. They don't marry. Remove yourself from the world. Right? Gam ze derech ra'ahi ve'asur lelechba. It's usur to do that. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to put yourself in a state where the materialism of the world doesn't matter. Where you just put it aside. Right? Hamalech b'derech zu nikra chote. And the person who does this is called a chote. He's making a serious mistake. Sharehu omer b'nazir. Because the pasuk says by a nazir, right? A nazir is a person who abstains, who vows to abstain from a certain level of materialism. Women, wine, right? So he's only allowed to do it for a certain time. You're not supposed to be a nazir olam, right? 30 days. And at the end of them, they're very specific halachot. At the end of those 30 days, what does he have to do? He has to bring korban chatas. He has to bring a sin offering. Why? Because the pasuk says, v'chiper alav. Why? Me'asher chatal ha'nefesh. He's made a mistake regarding his essence. You're not supposed to get to it. Now, he may feel that he's gone to one extreme, so he has to go to the other extreme. So that may even be the right thing for him to do, and that's why the Torah allows a vehicle for him to express that. But that means that he allowed himself to get to an extreme, which is unhealthy. There is something that needs fixing here. Right? And that's Amru Chachamim, Umayim Nazir, Shelo Pirei, Shelo Minayayin, Tzich Kapara, Hamoneh Atzmo Bichol Davar, V'davar Alachat Kama V'kama. So if a Nazir, who only abstains from wine, and maybe impurity, he has to gain Kapara, he has to be forgiven. So could you imagine how much a person needs to be forgiven if he abstains from everything? So that's not the goal. So ask me an obvious question. I mean, I don't know. I think it's kind of a question. Ask me a question. This person is not supposed to do this. Ask me a question. Pardon? Well, no. He's just saying you're not supposed to do it. Right? Yeah?
Then how else, instead of doing it this way, would you then do it? Or would you then reorient yourself?
Okay.
If this is, you know, what the Rambam is suggesting that we normally do, then how else would you do it?
Okay, the Rambam isn't saying there's another way to do it. So that's part of the question. Yeah?
Why isn't this like the rest of the character traits where if you're in one extreme trying to go to the other, why does he have to go and like specify these?
Right.
He's already going over like if you have a problem with this or the other extreme.
Okay. Give me an example. A great example of an individual in the Torah who seems to do exactly this. Pretty big character in the Torah. I give you a hint?
In Torah or
not? In Torah. Pretty good example. Nope. I'm not going to do this. It's interesting.
Torah or
no? Torah. Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on Har Sinai, and according to the Midrashim, he doesn't eat, he doesn't drink, he's with the angels, he leaves the world behind. In fact, when he comes down, he's poreish from his wife, which is another discussion. It's not exactly this topic, but so there's something good. There were tzaddikim throughout time, and there still are, who abstain from all these things. They don't live in nice houses. The Chofetz Chaim. They fast on Monday and Thursdays. They try to abstain from. I had a mashgiach in Gush, Rav Uzi, who was like a reed. He was like, there wasn't an ounce of fat on his body, and he would come whenever he would give us a shiur. He would come with a cup of water, boiling water. He would boil water. He didn't put tea in it. And he would just sip water because the hot water kind of cleans out your tubes. It's like anything else, right? You wash a dish from the grease, you know, healthy, right? And that's what he would do. He would eat very minimally. And he was white and pasty because he was really in the base medrash learning Torah. So what's wrong with it? So, but that's the Rambam, right? So I think maybe the difference is, do you hear the question? I think the difference is that the tzaddik who's doing this doesn't think this is the goal. He thinks that this is a vehicle towards a goal. But the goal is definitely the middle ground. You may be the type of person that you're worried or you're not able to reach the middle ground. That's really what a year in yeshiva is. Like when you think about it to some degree relative to where you were, this is a much more monastic existence, right? You're doing without certain things. And the more you experience that, by the way, during this year, the more you will ultimately get out of it. You know? Do an experiment 1 week. Okay? And, you know, if you're ready for it. And, you know, see if you can spend that much more time sitting and learning. Don't go to town. You know? Don't hang out. See if you can do that for a week. By the end of the week on Thursday, you'll be like stir crazy. But you'll look back at the week and it'll blow your mind how much you accomplished in that week. Do this experiment 1 week. It will blow your mind. It took me a while to like experiment with this. It was unbelievable to have a week where I wanted to see if I get through 1 week without, in my day, like, my big Yetzirah was like Robert Ludlum books. Like, you know, I'd go back to the room and I'd like read a 300-page book and the next thing I knew it was 3 a.m, right? Today you have laptops and movies, whatever, right? So take a week. Don't do it. Watch what it does for you. It's unbelievable. But not if that's the goal. I don't think the goal is that you never date girls and you never eat meat and you never go to town. And you know, that's not the goal. Right? Now, by the way, this calls into question, and we'll get to this tomorrow. This will be our topic. We have to stop. But this calls into question a whole world of Yidden who sit in yeshiva for years and years and years and years and distance themselves from the world to explore Torah. You can't say that's wrong. And yet, how does the Rambam deal with that? Right? But part of the reason why this is so connected to ethics is because distancing myself from everything inevitably will distance myself from everyone. And we have to see how that works. Right? So we'll get to this a little more tomorrow, because I'm going to get a little deeper into this. Yeah, send up the Hilchos Deos.